Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. As many predicted, Israel's onslaught on Gaza is triggering a much larger Middle East conflict. It appears the United States is willing to fight Israel's regional enemies for Israel. This is what Joe Biden's blank check, underwriting Israel, actually means. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest, London in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. In Toronto, we have Munad Ayish. He is a professor of sociology at Mount Royal University in Calgary. And in Rome, we cross to Romana Rubeo. She is an author and managing editor of the Palestine Chronicle. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump any time you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to the good professor first in Toronto. I'm calling this program Biden's blank check, and that's essentially what we see coming from the administration. We have this hemming and hawing, you know, negotiations, friends can disagree with each other in private, all of this nonsense, this verbal nonsense. Actions speak louder than words, and I see nothing coming out of the Biden administration that is stopping Israel's onslaught on Gaza and possible regional ambitions. There is no red line they can't cross. Go ahead in Toronto.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Look, in 1986, when Biden was a member of the U.S. Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, he said it very bluntly. Yep. If Israel didn't exist, U.S. would invent it. And he argued at that point, he opposed sales weapons sales to Saudi Arabia because, and I quote, the Saudis could not become agents of U.S. interests in the Persian Gulf region. He has always viewed Israel as an investment for U.S. imperial interests in the region. Since its founding in 1948, the United States has given Israel anywhere between, I've seen estimates of $130 billion. I've seen people account for inflation, saying it's closer to $300 billion. Now, the majority of that money goes to weapons and weapon sales. By the way, the Israelis have to spend the majority of that funding to buy weapons from American defense firms and defense contractors. And so it's basically, when he says it's an investment, that's the only moment he's telling the truth. He sees it as the largest U.S. military base in the world and as a base that serves U.S. imperial interests in the region. And the U.S. has no red lines itself over what Israel does, because the U.S. will pursue its goals in the region regardless of how much death and destruction that causes to the people of the region. And this is really critical to understate, you know, underline that the U.S. views Israel as an imperial outpost. That's it. That's the reason for its support. It has nothing to do with democratic values. It has nothing to do with respect for human rights or international law. It has nothing to do with these talking points that saturate our political discourse.
Professor, it seems quite obvious to me that you're a regular viewer of this program, because that's what I say every single week here. Let me go to Lionel. Lionel, in light of what we heard from our guest in Toronto, I don't want to be too provocative here, but it seems to me that Biden has put genocide on the ballot.
Well, what's so fascinating to me is how the narrative is changing every single day, and how there is this uptick in counter-programming from a variety of very, very popular and very important platforms, which give a different version of this. And what's also worth learning is that, remember where we were here, October the 7th, the narrative of this, as Max Blumenthal calls this, this Texas Chainsaw Massacre story, which has been refuted. I hearken back to one of the greatest lines in American cinema from The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. When the legend becomes fact, print the legend. And what we're seeing is this evolving narrative, which brings into mythology, which is now being abutted by reality. And Americans have really, they understand the Ukraine thing because they hate Russia and Russophobia and yeah. But a lot of Americans are saying, now explain this again, how Israel or this particular area of the world is an actual real threat. And what's that story again? And how has the narrative of October the 7th kind of dwindled? Do you see what's happening here? It's like watching birds and murmurations. You're seeing huge movements of themes change. And when it drifts off completely, Americans are going to say, wait a minute. You led us on to something we don't understand. And Biden is assuming that people are following along to the music, that everybody's on board with this.
Yeah, but the trick there is never to give context. And that's what these people, the American administration, the Israelis and American allies, they don't want to contextualize anything. And it's really remarkable when you allow people like our guests on our program to give the context. It is so eye-opening for so many people. I didn't know that, okay? After October 7th, I was on a podcast, and a very smart guy, really a nice guy, but he didn't even realize that Gaza was under siege. He didn't know that it was being blockaded. See, this is what we have to deal with here, what makes it so difficult to get what I would say an alternative narrative, but the truth out. Go ahead, Ramana.
Yes, first of all, of course, there is a lack from mainstream media to analyze the situation in Palestine and in Gaza in particular, in general, even prior to October 7. But following October 7, it was very important for the actors involved in this to purport a narrative that I agree, it was like a myth, a legend, and that was functional. Not only for Israel to carry out genocidal acts, as we are seeing now, unfortunately, for the 118 days in a row, but also to give geopolitical justification to the actions of the United States. Because now we are seeing, yes, it's true, the United States has interests in the region, and I totally agree. This is the main reason why the United States has consistently supported Israel throughout the years. But what we are witnessing now is that the United States is kind of available to lose its own interests in the region. Yes. We have never seen so many actors involved, even non-state actors, being openly against the United States. And despite all of this, the United States is still along with Israel, also because of the pro-Israeli lobby in the country, the upcoming elections, and so forth and so on. So, of course, they needed a validation, a justification, and they tried to push the clock back to over 20 years ago. They try to say, it's like 9/11, guys. So this is a war on terror. We are completely justified. Well, I think this justification is not working with the current audiences anymore in the West and in the US either.
Well, if we go back to the professor in Toronto, I mean, you know, I absolutely expect this conflict to expand, and Lebanon is the front and center here. The Israelis will drag the Americans. See, we have to keep it, you know, who wags the dog here? This is the problem here, because I don't think the Biden administration wants to have the conflict expand into Lebanon, but that Israel certainly does, since it's not winning in Gaza. So if it's not winning in Gaza, it will expand the conflict. And of course, you have these ridiculous senators that I won't even mention on my program here, that they want to knock it, you know, give it to Iran. This is exactly what Israel wants the United States to do. Go ahead in Toronto.
Yeah, and Netanyahu has wanted the U.S. to take on Iran for a very long time. The U.S., I don't believe the U.S. or Iran want an all-out war. I actually think that there is even some political sort of groups in Israel that don't want that all-out war, but Israel as a whole has moved so far to the right that they do want, there are elements that certainly want that all-out war. Let me pull out a quote from Biden himself recently when asked about the attack on the U.S. base in Jordan, and a reporter asked him, do you hold Iran responsible for this? And this was his response, and I quote, yes, and I quote, in the sense that they're supplying the weapons to the people who did it. So you're admitting the U.S. is responsible for the genocide of the Palestinians because you're supplying Israel with the weapons to do that. So you are in the thick of it. You sent aircraft carriers immediately to protect Israel as they carried out the genocidal operation. High-ranking military officials are meeting with Israeli military officials on a consistent basis. Of course, the people in the region are making the right read that the U.S. is actively involved in this, and and are responsible for all the acts of genocide that the Israelis are committing. They are just as responsible as the Israelis. And this, the possibility of a wider regional war is still on the table. I've said this before, it doesn't, not every war starts because everybody agrees we want to start a war. A war can start with everybody saying we don't want a war, and then it still happens anyway. I'm not predicting it will happen. I'm not saying that it will for sure happen, but it's still a very real possibility on the table.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we can, you know, we can extend that argument. Lionel, I mean, if Netanyahu, who wants to save his own political skin here, it's in his interest to expand the conflict, they will do, there's not much Biden can do to stop that.
You know, I was explaining to somebody what I think I try to do, and with all due respect, I hope no one takes offense at this. I feel almost like a special ed teacher who understands that my classroom, namely the American people, my fellow Americans, have learning disabilities. They live under a 1960s, 1970s delusion that all of our ammunition is just comes out of nowhere, that we can beat any country at any time, and that people like Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, Ansar Allah, these are primitive, spear-throwing, tribal terrorists.
Yeah, but Lionel, before we go to the break, all the groups you just mentioned there, they are the result of American involvement in the Middle East. That isn't exactly, they're all reactions to American right. imperial interests in the Middle East, supported by Israel. That is the facts here, never presented in mainstream media. All right, I have to jump in here, folks. We have to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, let's go back to Ramallah in Rome. Another poisonous element that the mainstream media and governments are peddling all the time is the day after. I find it so insulting. Why don't we deal with what's going on today and worry about that later? And of course, the day after never includes any kind of active role on the part of the Palestinians. They're just objectified like they've been for the last 75 years. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is just another distraction against what's going on in Gaza, which is a genocide. Go ahead, in Rome.
Absolutely. On the one hand, it has a lot to do with the delusion that we were speaking about a while ago. Yes, because of course there is this idea that there is no right of self-determination. These people are so dehumanized that we do not have to agree on their right of self-determination. So we can completely, as a colonial power and imperialist power, decide on the fate of millions of people. But the problem here is also that Israel is, you know, trying to speak about a day after, but not only Israel, the West in general, the United States, the European countries, speaking about a two-state solution and a demilitarized state, but they have no idea even on how to end this war. Yes. This is the truth now. So we are speaking about something that is completely, out of the real priorities, of the actual priorities here. Israel does not know how to end the war because of internal pressures, because when Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant says this is an existential threat, in this case, I think it's the truth. It's true that Israel cannot simply stop the war, a war that it's losing, and the day after saying, I'm living in this region, and I am, you know, the myth of invincibility, even from a military point of view, political point of view, is completely in tatters now. So Israel does not know how to prolong its own existence in the region. And, you know, speaking about the future of Gaza in this moment without involving such a powerful actor like the Palestinian resistance, which is now currently leading not only militarily, but also politically and strategically. We are seeing it even in the negotiations undergoing. We are seeing that the last word is always in the Palestinian resistance hands. This means something. And despite the fact that, you know, the West seems not to be aware of it, but in actuality, they will have to deal with this reality for sure.
Yeah, they live in this fanciful unicorn world. It's really exhausting covering it. I mean, this is what I do for a living. That's exhausting. It ages me here. Let's go back to the professor in Toronto. You know, Raimondo was talking about the existential threat to Israel. I think it's a good point. But I think we can be more refined. There's an existential threat to Zionism and the Zionist ideology that we have seen getting worse and more radical over the decades, particularly under the present government here. That is under threat, okay? And it doesn't know how to move forward, okay? It has no gear control. It reacts with violence because it only believes in deterrence. Well, if your deterrence is in tatters, then you're even more dangerous. That's what I worry about. Go ahead in Toronto.
Absolutely. Let me just first very quickly say that the real existential threat right now is to the Palestinian people who are facing the genocide.
Yeah, right. Like, okay, so that's got that. Got it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I know people agree, but I just want to make that clear.
Sure.
And so Zionism is a political ideology that was always going to go down the path of using violence. It's a very simple equation. I won't get into the academic complexities of it. People, Palestinians, lived on the land. Zionism was a project that said, well, we want different people to live on the land, so we have to remove those people forcefully off the land because they will never just leave their land. Who does? Nobody does. Nobody just says, oh, I'm going to leave my homeland. So it was violence from the early parts of the 1900s, and that violence continues throughout the 20th century into the 21st century, and that violence was inevitably going to get more and more extreme. And so this genocidal operation is not the first. 1948 was the first mass expulsion of the Palestinians, and the Palestinians have always called it the ongoing Nakba, which means catastrophe, and we're seeing this next phase of mass expulsion happening right now. But it has produced, and it is producing right now, completely devastating consequences that it will take Palestinians generations to heal, but it was never going to actually succeed because Palestinians, this is their homeland. They're never going to leave it. We can share the homelands. We can make it both of our homelands. I've made this very clear in other writings.
What a radical idea! My good, have equal rights for everyone. Wow, that's really that's radical thinking, Lionel. In the same line of thinking here, is that. I don't know if you heard, because it was in the last news cycle, that Kamala Harris had some kind of election event, and I don't know why anyone in their right mind would go to such an event, but we'll leave that aside. But two women in hijabs were turned away. So what's going on with the liberal, tolerant West, okay? I mean, it's just absolutely disgusting, this kind of behavior. Lionel.
Well, you know, it's funny. Again, I always represent this. It's like I'm a traveler in time. I'm dealing with the people here in my country who have no idea of what's going on. And I'm trying my best to tell them, please, for the love of God, listen to what's going on right now. You know, years ago, I'll never forget, there was an instance where I think it was Karen Hughes or somebody from the George Bush administration. And she was talking to some very wealthy Saudi Arabian women who wore veils. And she said one day, you know, one day, I'm going to have you be able to walk without that veil and drive if you want. And this woman stood up. She says, I have 12 drivers. Would you tell Mother Teresa this? And I'll never forget the idea that we are still intellectually landlocked in a time where if I went to Times Square, which is about 5 blocks from me now, and I said, here's $1,000, can anybody even remotely approximate what Zionism means? What is it? I'm embarrassed to say, people would say, I have no idea what you're talking about, because we think that there is this place called Israel that is always attacked by these people called the terrorists who want them obliterated. And if you were to speak up about this, you're then, they change the dynamic and you're an anti-Semite. You turn it. And right now on college campuses, people who just merely want to express an idea at, of all things, this marketplace of free ideas, they're expelled because they're anti-Semitic. But they can be racist and promote DEI stuff. That's a different story. And I am living in this intellectual fugue. And like talking to you is like this refreshing oasis. It's like, I'm not alone. Somebody understands what's going on here. I swear to you, I'm on a desert island here in my country.
Yeah, well, that really destroys any kind of moral legitimacy the United States has in the world moving forward. Ramana, I think that, you know, what we've seen, you know, the systematic rape story. We've seen the UNRWA story. This is, again, sleight of hand, change the topic. But I think Anthony Blinken, I can imagine him in an orange jumpsuit.
Yes, like, it's really incredible to read these mainstream reports about all the, what they call the atrocities on October 7th. And then there's always a line towards the end of the article saying no further evidence was provided, even with the UNRWA story. So why are you leading with that piece of news if you have no evidence and you are admitting to that? And then there is, you know, the idea of these mainstream media who is, you know, invincible in its pursuing of the truth. But we have seen time and again throughout history how the truth was constantly manipulated. What I am witnessing here and now is that the new generation, though, gives me some hope. There is a change. There is a, you know, they're switching to something else. The, you know, the cliche of the Hasbara do not seem to work so well with the new generations. They open TikTok from, you know, one get ready with me, and then they see something else, and they're curious about it. We've seen this generation, you know, the day after the shameful campaign from Zara, the fashion branding giant. And they went physically to the stores and saying, you cannot do this. So this generation seems less aware, less, sensible, less to the diktats of the Hasbara, despite the fact that Israel is so desperate that we reported with the Palestine Chronicle, they're actually buying artificial intelligence system to try to direct the debate on social media. But, and despite the fact that we know that there is an official, basically, censorship with some social media, especially with the Meta platform, which is the biggest social media platform. But despite all of this, this is not how social media work. And the all accusations and allegations do not seem to register with the new generation as it happened in the past.
Well, Professor, have you seen that change of consciousness in generations? Because, you know, I think of the number of times that Israel is mowed the grass, mowed the lawn, as it were. But in this time round, there's so much more awareness, YouTube and things like this. It's really quite extraordinary. During all of this tragedy, that is the only little sliver of hope that I see, that people are interested in what's going on. Go ahead, Professor.
Yeah, I agree. I've said this before. Genocide has consequences. People don't just forget about genocide.
Amen. Amen.
You said the perfect word earlier. Yeah, and you said a perfect word earlier, fanciful. The Americans and Israelis have this fanciful idea that a year after this operation ends, people are going to move on. This is entirely false. People will never forget about this. That people's political consciousness of the world, of politics, of their place in history and in activism is being shaped in this moment, and the consequences of that will be felt far and wide for a long time to come, hopefully to advance more freedom and liberation for more people around the world.
And, you know, we can end on this note here. But thinking just what you said there, Professor, years from now, people will ask you, what did you do? What did you think? And what did you know? And that will haunt a lot of people. And I'm really glad that everyone can see my stripes on my shoulder. And I take a lot of flack for it. Lady and gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Toronto, New York, and in Rome. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.